And it was quite a luxury for the local people.
Mm-hmm. Where did the oysters come from?
From Canandaigua, New York, from a distributor.
Oh, yeah.
And I can see it yet. A blue keg of oysters. Mm. Sold out, they were gone.
Yes.
Didn't reorder.
What else would your store have sold? Perhaps molasses?
Well, molasses and kerosene. In the summertime, they often carried watermelons, mm-hmm. which came from the south, mm-hmm. and were a treat for the local people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What about farm implements, the smaller ones like shovels and pitchforks?
Well, that's only... Yeah, they had shovels, pitchforks, hoes, mm-hmm. rakes, mm-hmm. and small, probably hammers.
Mm-hmm.
Just small tools that you use on a farm.
Did your store carry anything such as a whip for a horse?
Yes, they had a whole rack of whips. It ran on a circle. And the whips were fastened by the upper part and hung down. And I remember my dad telling one time of having a minister come in who was quite a horse lover. And he snapped him the whip and he says, "I'll take this one." And they said, "Well, the whip is probably $1. The minister walked out and he says, "You can take that in sermons."
What did he mean, you could take that?
Take it in sermons. Come to church.
Oh, dear. He took the whip with him?
Yes, he took the whip with him. That was one of their charity gifts. They'd give him the whip anyway.
Dear. You said earlier that the store collected butter and eggs. Did you play a part in helping with that when it came back to the store?
I, Saturdays, used to pack eggs to be shipped to Buffalo. Mm-hmm. In egg crates.
In egg crates.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what about
the
butter?
You know what an egg crate is? About that long and about so high.
Uh-huh.
And be four or five layers of eggs and have a divider in the middle and be so many eggs over here and so many over here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They would do that once a week?
When the eggs got ahead of them, so they
And the butter would go in individual crocks, or
no,
what?
The butter was repacked in big tubs.
And now how large is a big tub? What size about?
Probably 2 foot high and had a circumference of 3 1 4 1 6 times.
Yes. Yes.
About
larger than a bushel basket top. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Now
probably large around as a barrel.
Yes. How did they send these eggs and the butter to Buffalo?
By the New York Central Railroad, which ran through Eagle Harbor, about a mile south of the village.
I see. That was the RL&B?
No, that's the New York Central.
Oh, I see.
New York Central Railroad.
Oh, now, what is the RL&B?
Rochester, Lockport, and Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
Electric road.
Mm-hmm. The electric? It ran on electric?
Electricity. Hmm?
You said that was about 1909 that came
1909,
in?
It was ready for passengers because I drove to Albion to high school, or Howard Pratt stopped for me on his way to high school, driving a horse and buggy, mm-hmm. until 1909, mm-hmm. along in November, when the railroad was ready for passengers, and I rode on the railroad after that.
I see. Now, with Eagle Harbor, were there churches and schools there?
There's a Methodist Episcopal Church, known in those days, which is now the United Methodist,
mm-hmm.
and a Wesleyan Church.
Mm-hmm.
You probably don't hear many of those around here. As a child, I attended both Sunday schools because my parents sort of felt that for business reasons, why should we should attend both churches and support both churches.
Oh, my goodness.
I got all the religious education I needed to have when I was a kid.
Church played a big part in the community life,
yes,
though, didn't it?
And the Methodist Episcopal Church had a library of books, and I was the librarian for quite a few years.
Is that right? There wasn't a town library.
No.
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 Mm-hmm. No. But you said that you went to school at Eagle Harbor?
At Eagle Harbor through the seventh grade.
Yes.
Then I went to Albion to high school.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, in the Eagle Harbor school, was it a one-room schoolhouse?
A two-room schoolhouse. Mm-hmm. One room was from the first grade through the fourth, and the other room was the fifth grade through the seventh.
Mm-hmm.
There was no kindergarten.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Was there a doctor in Eagle Harbor?
Yes, in the early days there was a doctor.
Do you remember his name?
Only from my parents, mm-hmm, who attended my mother when I was born. His name is Dr. Cochran. Mm. In later years there was Dr. Mudge. Mm. And I don't remember Dr. Mudge, but after that was Dr. Thornton, who I knew, mm-hmm, and he had children of my age.
Mm-hmm.
That was the last doctor we had.
Mm-hmm.
This is getting out of hand, along the canal, about the blacksmith shops, mm-hmm, and we had two blacksmith shops in town. And two Cooper shops.
Mm-hmm.
And believe it or not, I was able to make a barrel.
Have you been down to the museum underneath the church? I see you down there.
Yes, yes, at the Cobblestone Museum.
Did you see,
yes,
the barrel that was partly constructed down,
yes,
there?
Yes.
Well, that's just the way it was.
Is that
put
right?
The stays and put the hoops,
yes,
around and,
yes,
a rope that you press down and pull the hoops together. And,
yes.
And
quite a job and quite a few people.
Well, they used some tools to rim out the top of the staves so that you could insert the head of the barrel.
Yes.
The old store, known as Walters Brothers, was torn down when the Erie Barge Canal was put through in the years of 1910 to 1913. And the grocery business was moved to a building known as Mrs. Backus Schoolhouse, moved from her lot on North Main Street up to the property owned by Walters Brothers. And the business was carried on after that as a grocery business in a small building.
You said that your father eventually sold.
My father got out of business probably along in 1911 or 1912 because of ill health.
Mm-hmm. Who did he sell the building to?
Well,
or the
I
business?
Don't think he ever owned the building.
I don't mean the building, I mean the business.
The business to William Walters.
Mm-hmm. His surviving brother.
That's right.
Yes. Say it again.
The grocery business was eventually taken over by a son of William Walters, Leon Walters, who took it over after he came home from World War I,
mm-hmm,
and ran the business for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
He's in Florida now, and they were coming up. He's been in bed for 7 years with a stroke.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just getting his high school about 1909. And first, I rode a bicycle. I drove a horse and buggy. Howard Pratt lived below us on the ridge and came by with a horse and buggy and wanted to know if I should like to ride with him, which I did. Until the trolley, RL&B Railroad Company, started up in November 1909. After that time, I always used the trolley to get back and forth to Eagle Harbor. The trolley ran about a half a mile south of Eagle Harbor.
How much would that have cost at that time for a ride?
Gosh, I don't know.
Not very much, though.
No. We used to get a monthly ticket and go back and forth on that. Mm-hmm. All the kids in Noseville and Eagle Harbor always went to Albion in high school.
I see.
And then you asked me the other day about what I was interested in high school. I played a trumpet in high school, and I was in the school band and the orchestra, and the, marching band. And I also belonged to the debating team. And we used to debate with Medina and have a contest, and judges from outside decide which one to debate. And went through.
Do you remember any of your teachers?
Well, the two teachers that I remember the most were the ones that were the toughest. We called her Aunt Mary Steele. I took fourth year English of her. I learned more about literature and English than I did the other 3 years I was in school. Another teacher I remember who was very tough was called Crab Barrett. Her name was Ella Barrett. And I went into first year German, and it was understood in the school among the students, if you got through the first testing period, you'd stay on. So I studied very hard, and I got through the first test, and I continued studying German for 2 years. Latin I gave up after I studied it a year, because the next year you had to take Caesar, and I was looking ahead to taking wiped through Virgil in 4 years, and I had no yen for Latin at all. I graduated in 1913, 38 in the graduating class. And in that part of it, we had a 50th reunion in 1963. And I doubt if there's anyone else alive, except perhaps one boy in Albion, Albert Smith, that may be still alive. The rest of them are all gone.
And you're only 82.
Yeah.
Yes.
And perhaps Chesbro Kellard, who has moved to New Jersey, may be alive. Is related to the Chesbro Kellard who lives in Medina on Park Avenue.
Right. After you graduated from high school in Albion, what did you do?
I went to RBI from January 1914 to May 15th, 1914. And many of the subjects that they taught there I had taken in high school, bookkeeping and related subjects, and didn't have to go through all the course. There was an opportunity offered in the paper for an employee of the Union Bank. My father told me to write a letter of application. I was told to interview them within a couple of weeks, and I did. And
Who did the interview with you, do you remember?
The Union Bank.
Yes.
Officers of the Union Bank interviewed me, mm-hmm. and was told by telephone to come to work in 2 weeks.
Oh, my.
And after I got through with RBI and was in the Union Bank a short time, I thought a correspondence course in banking would be very helpful, which it was, regarding investments and things that I had never been able to get in the average high school course. I took economics, but things in banking, investments and that sort, wasn't taught. So it did me a great deal of good by taking this course.
You were 18 approximately at that time?
About 18.
Mm-hmm. What's your first job?
My principal job at that time, being a new employee, was to open and close the doors and windows, which they gave you a name as draft clerk, filling ink bottles, putting in new pens, supplying the counters in the lobby with deposit slips and checks for the customers, and learning to run an adding machine, and gradually worked into the banking on a slow scale.
Could you become a teller from
no.
that end of the scale?
No.
No?
I became a teller in 1917. The assistant cashier of the bank at that time was taken ill and lasted only 2-3 months. He had cancer, and I was put up in his place as assistant cashier.
Is an assistant cashier the same as a teller?
That's a teller. What they call on the window.
On the window. At that time, the how was the setup inside of the bank? Did you have glass windows between you and the customer?
Oh, yes. It was all glass right there.
We don't have that today.
No, not so much. It's all glass, surrounded the glass with a barred window. For 3 or 4 windows.
A bar window.
Barred window.
Right.
Between the customer and the lobby, or the interior of the bank and the lobby for the customers. Is that enough on that?
Well, yes, you can. I think this will continue along. So this was a couple of years later, and then World War I came along.
World War I came along in 1918. I enlisted in Buffalo with a friend of mine, Albert Rumble. We were both accepted and sent to Fort Slocum, New York, where we hung around for 5 days before we were examined. And I was examined and went before 4 or 5 doctors. And finally, the one who said I should stay or leave told me that I couldn't get in the Army because of a hernia I had, and was told to go to the headquarters, and I'd be given a slip, showed that I was rejected because of no fault of my own.
Right.
And within the next year, I became a little old enough to be registered in the draft. I went to the Albion Courthouse, where Dr. Whiting, an old reliable doctor in town, examined the draftees. And he examined me and said, because of the hernia, he couldn't accept me. And I said, well, I'm all through. And he says, no, not quite yet. He says, there's a table and a chair over there, and you sit there and pick out some sheets on the table, which are applications or acceptances of the draft. And different men will appear before you. You get their age, date of birth, and next of kin, and vital statistics that we wish to have. Write them out, and when you're done, just say sign here and hand them a pen. And I stayed there all day working, and Dr. Whiting says, that's the last of your Army experience. Dr. Whiting told me that if I would come to his office, he would fit me with a truss. And he says, you're young. He says, the heaviest thing that you will ever pick up is a pen or pencil in the bag. So I did that and never been bothered with it since.
Well, good.
Because of my age, I outgrew it.
Yes, I see. What was Medina like at about that time? Was it a canal town or a factory town?
Furniture town.
Furniture?
S.A. Cook, Mahar Brothers, Medina Woodwork and Furniture. I don't know if I can remember any others or not.
What was the, why so much furniture, Medina?
Well, then it all learned to upholster furniture and make it, and they stayed here.
And it was shipped out, a lot of it?
Oh, yeah, sold to Sears and all the big companies through the country.
Was it ever called a canal town?
No, not that I ever remember about.
How come so many saloons were in Medina?
I don't know. We had really a bunch of them.
Maybe 15?
12 or 15 saloons in those days. Of course, this was before the days of when they had the vote on the prohibition. And I think people were getting sick of seeing drunks on the street.
Mm-hmm. That's what brought Prohibition about.
Prohibition, but Prohibition didn't last long.
No. Well, it lasted until 1933, though.
Yeah. When did it start? About 25?
1918, I believe.
It did? Mm-hmm. It did? I didn't know it started that early.
Yeah. But speaking of Prohibition, do you remember, I've heard of people telling about making what they call Dago wine. And other?
Well, that was among the Italian population. They were great for grapes and used to make wine. And when I was appraising homes and going down in the basements and everything, I'd see 4 to 6 and 7 barrels of wine or hard cider in the basement. Mm-hmm. Besides that, the women were great canners of tomatoes because of the Italians love tomatoes. Mm-hmm. And I bet you'd see 200-300 cans of tomatoes on the shelves.
For the canning, yes.
Canning.
Yes. In the Prohibition part, do you think, of course, most people voted it out eventually. It just didn't work, did it?
Didn't work.
So, now, in the meantime, you were working still. Now, in 1915, I think you told me you remembered working with the savings and loan.
The savings and loan met at the City Hall in the lobby from each Monday night from 4 to 9 o'clock. And three of the employees, the secretary, Harry Walton, Jim Collins, and myself, went to the City Hall and took in funds from the depositors, or did clerical work while we were there. And that lasted until about 1920, when the Union Bank offered the savings and loan a window in their office, and Ernestine Gray became the teller and worked until the bank was closed in 1931.
I'd like to ask you why a bank would allow, I think as competition, to come in and have a window.
The secretary of the Savings and Loan Association, Harry Welton, was cashier of the bank. And for that reason, no kick was ever made by anyone in the banking department or anyone else, because they were both under the rule of the state banking department for examination. Nobody ever kicked.
But really, wasn't a competition, or didn't the banks take loans at that time?
At that time,
deposits.
The savings and loan only had what they call share deposits. You had to subscribe for 25 cents a share in multiples of it to $5 a week was the most they would take. And people saved their money on that basis, which no bank would look at.
Mm-hmm. Too much paperwork, really.
That's right.
Right.
My means of transportation to work was being by the trolley from Eagle Harbor to Medina, where occasionally I would drive. In 1922, I bought 935 Gwynn Street as a home in March of that year, 6 months before we were married.
Now, backing up, before you were married, you were riding the trolley, and I think you said that the trolley came into Medina?
That's right.
And you, what, had to make a transfer?
No.
And, well, you had to wait, or what? How did you meet your wife?
I came in on the 8 o'clock trolley, and Gladys Levan talked in Albion, and would take a trolley going east about 5 minutes after I arrived. The same thing happened at night. If I took the trolley to go home, but Gladys would arrive about 5 minutes before I left,
and
went along this way until September 6, 1922, when we were married.
Mm-hmm.
You want anything about the grandchildren there?
Well, I would like to know where you were married and who married you.
We were married at Gladys' home on West Center Street.
Mm-hmm. Were you married by a minister?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Glad.
Yeah.
Who's the minister that married us?
Same minister that married my mother and dad.
Really?
What was his name from? He was retired and lived in Holly. Sorry, I can't think of his name. But anyway, we had the same minister and the same cateress that were at my mother and dad's wedding.
How beautiful.
And they were married in Middle Park.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I can't remember his name, no.
Well, that's fine. Did you have a honeymoon in those days?
Oh, yes.
Did you have time?
Yes.
Okay.
Went up in the Adirondacks and around the Hudson River.
We were on a honeymoon for about 2 weeks.
Yeah.
We came back and this house was all furnished, ready to go into.
Beautiful. And you had, Mr. Walters, you had purchased this home before you were married.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And I hadn't.
Or even ask her.
Oh, no, that isn't true. Well, you called me up.
Before you saw it.
I was teaching in Rochester, and he called me up, and he said he was afraid Mrs. Post might change her mind and not sell the house.
Mrs. Post owned it. Uh-huh. Yes.
She worked in the bank, too.
I see.
And I didn't even know where it was, mm-hmm. but I said, but if it satisfies you, all right. So you signed up a contract that night, and I didn't see it until the weekend. But it was already purchased.
Well, I knew I could sell it quickly.
I know one thing I wanted to ask you, Mr. Walters. When you said you went on your honeymoon, did you drive?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Okay, well then.
Model T Ford.
Then did you belong to an auto club?
No.
Automobile club.
No. Well,
am I right that your uncle or some relative was the first president of that?
That's Louis, cousin.
That's Louis Walters. He was the secretary of the local club, I think.
Is he related to you?
Yes, he's a cousin.
I see. Mm-hmm. Did you belong to that?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
Okay.
So, you came back and you settled in here. Now, from this marriage, you were married in 1922 and you have several daughters. What are their names?
Dorothy and Joanne.
Okay, Dorothy married...
Tudor L. Thomas.
Okay.
T-U-D-O-R.
And Joan married?
Charles N. Hood, the second.
I see. Charles Hood, related to the man who was such a good character in town?
Yeah, his grandson.
I see. How many grandchildren do you have?
Seven.
And do you have any great-grandchildren?
Six.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, at this time, you were still working in the Union Bank?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Did you get past being a draft clerk?
Because of death, just a few years before, I became cashier.
The death of?
Harry F. Weldon.
I see.
Cashier.
Mm-hmm. And how long were you in that position?
About 5 years.
Mm-hmm. And then how did your interest broaden out from there? To other banking or what?
Well, let's see. Well, there's things come in between here, the stock market crash and...
Well, somewhere before that, I think you were telling about a bank robbery.
Oh, well...
Would you want to tell about that?
You want that in?
Sure.
While working in the Union Bank along in the late 1900s, a young man came in and spoke to the cashier, minding our post, and said he wanted $1,000 and he had an axe. Mm. Myron turned to me and whispered, says, call the police. He talked with the fellow who wanted the money and asked him to step into the back room and he'd talk it over with him. Back room of the bank, the boardroom. He went in there. In the meantime, the police came. And was told that they were in the back room. And he went in and grabbed a hold of this fellow by the arms. They took the axe away from him, lugged him away to the police station. He's later sent to Willard State Insane Asylum. Mm.
Usually, though, people didn't give you any trouble with robbing the bank or trying to?
No.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, the bank, the Union Bank, there were two banks in town, weren't there?
Where else was the Union Bank located?
You know where J.H. Drugstore is?
Yes, on the corner of West Center and Main Street, mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, that was the property.
I see. Where was the Central Bank located?
Where the Marine Trust Company is now.
Just up the street a little ways?
No, same place.
Oh, I see. But I mean up the street from the Union Bank.
Yes.
Well, then were you a teller when the Big Depression came and the banks closed?
No, I was cashier.
Uh-huh. Did you know that this might have happened or have a feeling?
Yes, that's the stock market crash came in October 1929. Mm-hmm. And it was a big financial upheaval. Mm-hmm. From 1930-31 were tough years. Mm-hmm. And a big bank in New York City closed in 1931, previous to the bunch of bank closing that occurred in Western New York. Mm-hmm. And then November 1st, 1931, the Central Bank closed, and December 10th, about 1931, the Union Bank closed. Hmm. There's also Middleport, Rockport, and eventually Albion.
These banks all closed?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Someone has told me that that the business people from Edina had to go to Albion to do their banking.
Well, I'll tell you about that.
Okay.
The savings loan took the place of checking accounts until Medina Trust began in 1932. The way they do is open an account and take a check from their savings account and ask for a treasurer's check and mail it to whoever they wish to pay by endorsement. And the savings and loan was the only bank or financial institution of any kind in Medina that stayed open. All those years. Mm-hmm.
I understand a lot of this is due to your efforts where you tried to get payments, small payments,
their homes. Yes, we went to their homes and we had 25 houses mm-hmm. were turned back to us, people that couldn't pay for them, and we'd ask them if they wanted to finance it someplace else. They'd say no. And how do you want to dispose of it? Well, I haven't any money to pay for it. It cost about $200 to foreclose a property at that time. We would tell them that we'd be glad to give them $200 if they'd sign a deed to turn the place over to us. Mm-hmm. And that's how we accumulated so many properties that were in default. And then at that time, the Homeowners Loan Corporation came into existence.
Is that part of the savings and loan?
No, that was a corporation set up by the government.
I see, the federal government.
Federal government, for purpose of bailing out people whose homes were in jeopardy.
I see.
And they would refinance, examine the property and refinance it, and give the loan association homeowners loan corporation bonds that paid 4%. And many houses were turned over to the homeowners loan corporation by that means.
Hmm.
Those were tough days. The Leroy J. Skinner, father of Lee Skinner, was the attorney for the Homeowners Loan Corporation, mm-hmm. and closed the mortgages.
Mm. Somewhere along here, there was a bank holiday declared by the federal government. What did that mean? A bank holiday?
Yeah, let's see. I've got it here someplace.
That lasted about a week, I believe, didn't it? Or was it longer? Second, okay.
Mm-hmm. In 1933, all banks were closed in the United States by President Roosevelt in March, mm-hmm. for 1 week. Mm-hmm. And in that week was organized a Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, FDIC. And the banking rules became much stricter thereafter. And later in the year, the Savings and Loan Insurance Corporation, SLIC, was organized. Savings and loan business.
Mm-hmm.
And if they were in operation, if these organizations were in operation during 1931, probably no banks in the state would have closed.
Hmm.
From that date on, there were very hard times until 1941, when the war started and all business began to boom.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's
in the banking then, am I right? I think a lot of people are worried today that the banks could close again, people could lose their life savings. Could this ever happen again?
I doubt it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have, the banks that have been subject to close like that have been absorbed by stronger banks. The assets will be taken over. Of course, accounts are insured now for $40,000. If anybody has an account that has more than $40,000, that's not insured.
Mm-hmm.
And the banks are generally liquidated.
What do you think about some of our banks being purchased by foreign people, such as the Chinese, buying into Marina Midland? How do you feel about that?
I don't like it. The money that's obtained by OPEC, there's an awful bunch of it invested in this country.
A lot of it invested in this country?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Up in billions of dollars.
Yes.
But that's the way it is.
Mm-hmm.